was going 7 years ago.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
Ask me the questions I won't know.
That the only thing we have to fear is
history
bluffs. Hey, thanks for joining us here on History Bluffs. My name is Bob Nugent. I'm here with my co-host David Britton.
He sure is.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Limestone Fest has been really good. Oh, I'm sorry. You were asking how I was doing in a way where people don't really care. I didn't realize. Go ahead.
Please.
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. We are, like David said, in the middle of Limestone Fest. It's day two. We're having a great time. But we were able to schedule a really important guest today, someone that is well-known throughout history as a genius, I would say.
I would definitely say a genius.
A genius. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome...
Mr. Salty Pretzel.
Mr. Salty Pretzel.
I promised you I wouldn't do that anymore.
We couldn't get that guy. He wasn't available.
I'm not going to do that anymore.
Our guest today is well-known in their field, and we're very excited to have them here in the studio. Please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Isaac Newton. How are you today?
Isaac, I know it. You know, you embarrass me saying genius.
Well,
it's lovely, but I appreciate it.
You're so well known in your field, and we would be silly to never include you on this program, so we're happy to have you. We're going to go through, we're going to ask you some questions, and then you can carry on with
sure.
the afterlife, which I'm sure you're enjoying.
That's why, you know, I think that's important that you are available for questions, because people ask the same questions, of course.
And now we can get it down. We can get things written, and then I can
refer people to your podcast in the future when anyone needs me
to answer that
question. I will just cut out a transcript and send them this.
Hey, here you go.
Things to do in Denver when you're dead, where you could go back and just watch the.
Never saw it.
You never saw it.
No, I did see that.
Have you seen that? You're probably a big fan.
Yeah. I did a lot of lurking. It was the smell of popcorn really was distracting.
Oh, there you go. So let's start at the beginning of your story, and I'd like for you to tell me, what's your birthday? When were you born?
Well, you know how it is.
I do.
With Isaac. First of all, I was named Isaac, which I thought was a little Jewy for the time.
A little bit?
A little Jewy for the time.
Sure.
But I went with it, and I said, okay, fine. It'll be
fine. Right.
And it was, the longer you're dead, the more these
it's
details
harder
get
to
fuzzy.
Recall.
Yes.
Sure.
I think 1630?
1630 and a month and date?
I'm going to go July 20th.
July 20th, 1630. And where were you born? Where were you...
Well,
spit out onto the earth.
Right, I was young at the time, so clearly,
of course, yes.
Clearly, it was, I'm going to say Leeds. I was born in Leeds, UK.
The United Kingdom.
Currently the United Kingdom.
Yes,
of course. The heck, I thought.
Why not? Now, you
what
mentioned
the heck,
that...
why not be born?
Why not be born?
Why not be alive?
Go for it.
This
be
is
alive.
The time, in the 1630s. This is when we want to be alive. Let's talk a little bit about your family. Who was your father? What kind of man was he?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Larry Newton.
Larry Newton.
A lot of people, they call him Lawrence at the time, because a lot of the diminutives were not approved. He was not a sailor. Lawrence is a sailor. Lawrence.
You know who was a sailor?
Who?
Mr. Salty Pretzel.
He was. Very
Lawrence.
True.
Lawrence Newton, he was a cobbler. He was a cobbler.
A cobbler made shoes.
He made shoes.
Pies.
And delicious pies.
And delicious bready treats.
Bread.
And the weird thing about him was that he was constantly throwing tools at me.
That's not
which
good.
Is one of the reasons why I came... You know, I would think about how things flew. That's one of the things.
Of course.
Right, because he was a cobbler. He was really good with leather, though. He did
right.
a real nice job, real nice job. These shoes I'm wearing in the afterlife.
They're very nice.
Larry Newton.
They're regal.
Larry Newton. Larry Newton's Cobbler Shop.
So
please, go to Leeds.
Freedom,
go to Leeds.
We prefer people not plug.
Maybe later.
LarryNewtonCobblerShop.com.
So not a good relationship then.
It was okay. It was, you know, you look back at a certain point, you know, when you hit your 30s.
Sure.
And for me, it's what it's like I'm in my 3000s now, because math is my strong suit as well.
Yes.
And so you got to let go. You got to let go of the fury you had at your parents.
Sure.
I feel like every time he threw like an owl at me.
An owl?
Yeah.
Oh, an owl. I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes he would pick up an owl, though, which was crazy because
they were everywhere.
In the 1630s, there were owls everywhere. People tried to tame owls and make them like falconeers, but it never worked out. You wanted because who didn't want an owl on their shoulder?
I want one right now.
Yeah.
I want two. I've
well, they're
two
nocturnal.
Shoulders.
You couldn't do anything during the day with
well,
them.
That's
right
fine.
Soon.
They'll be
sleep.
Fine. They're
gonna be busy. They're nocturnal. You'd only wear them at night. You'd be a nocturnal beast yourself if you had an owl.
Very.
You
true.
Got a falcon during the day
and an owl at night. Sure. Yeah. Now, as a young man, your mother wanted you. wanted a very specific life for you. What can you tell me what she
specifically
saw you doing?
She did not want me to be a cobbler. She was talk bitches, man. What are you gonna do? Right? She was constantly on my dad about not making enough money.
You.
It was I mean, that was the great thing. As we grew up, there were shoes. There were shoes.
Yes, of course.
And, me and my siblings. I five brothers, four sisters, and she said never have children. That was one of the things that my mother
that's
said.
No
awful.
Children,
she
no
said,
shoemaking.
No shoemaking and no,
no
children.
No shoes, no kids.
In other words, my mother, not as psyched as you might think about her own life.
Sure.
Did not want me to duplicate her own life. So what she did is she would take a penny, or sometimes a hay penny.
A hay penny.
Right.
Oh, very popular.
Yeah. The popular hay penny, mm-hmm. and she would squirrel it away. A lot of animal analogies in the 1600s.
Where would she put that?
She would put it somewhere my father would never look, which was under the soap.
Oh, under the soap.
Yes.
He's a dirty,
not
dirty
a
cop.
Not a bathing
dirty,
man.
Dirty no, but he, the way he worked that those oils into the leather, it was perfect. It was a very supple oil, because he was a dirty man. Yeah, so she saved up enough money to send me to school.
Okay.
And she wanted me to be a scientist.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. And that was what she wanted. She thought she was very smart. She was a lot smarter than my dad.
It would not be hard to
it's
be
hard
smarter
to, you
than
know,
a shoemaker.
Well,
that's just insulting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that racist or something? I don't know. I'm
very
sorry.
Racist against shoemakers of the world.
I'm sorry.
Well, because the thing is my father would always say, you know, you think while you work.
Oh, right.
And my mother would always say, yeah, but you don't.
Oh.
And it was a disappointment.
They were like the Archie and Edith of the 1630s.
I thought you were going to go with Archie and Veronica.
Or the Archie and Veronica. The Jughead and Betty.
I thought he picked Betty.
Did he? I'm not up on...
They split the universe.
You have a lot
universe.
Of time to keep up
on
your Archie comics.
I can. I have my Archie comics. And I don't know what... Richie Rich these days.
Oh,
he lost all of his
Casper,
money in the bubble.
I mean,
yeah.
What are you going to do? Let's keep moving along here. At the age of 19, you composed a list that describes certain related events in your life up to that point. And it's really interesting to read nowadays. Can you tell us what the list contained and why you wrote it?
It was a list of dreams. When I was 19, this is, you know, when you're 19 in 16, you know, it would be what would have been 1649.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and in 1649, you're done. You're done with college.
Right. Sure.
Now, you can try to go for some sort of doctorate or some sort of, you get picked up again. It's a, you know, you're
in
the draft.
What kind of, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what kind of fields could people study in college in the mid-17th century?
A lot of religion. You know, it was unfortunate, but the religious people, and I could say it now, they were bossy. They were bossy magoos.
Well, yes.
A lot has changed.
Yes.
A lot of fingers in your pie saying, hey, man, pie should be cooked in this religious fashion and not that religious fashion.
So it was a list of goals?
It was totally a list of goals. It was like, what did I want to do? I wanted, for a long time, to be a novelist. You know?
Okay.
And sadly enough, the novel had just been invented, and so there wasn't a lot of time to be a novelist. And so I'd read Don Quixote.
Okay.
And I said to myself, that's what I want to do. I want to write comedy. That's what I want to do.
Be a comedy writer.
Right. I wanted to be a comedy writer in novel form in 1649.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I needed to make a living. And
yes,
so people were like, well, what we really want you to do is science. So what I did was I did a lot of work with potions. I was trying to create, gold, right?
Alchemy.
I studied alchemy at Oxford.
Sure.
I don't know if you, it was a secret group at the time.
It wasn't an official course that
no,
you could
no,
take.
There was a lot of tunneling.
We were
in the old Druid tunnels outside of Oxford.
Druids.
And there was
We would meet
over at Stonehenge on Saturdays, right around twilight, and we would talk about the nature of turning lead into gold. And so I would bring my notes, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out the different properties of lead and the different properties of different metals. And I didn't start working. I don't know if you know this. I didn't start working with fruits until I was well into my 30s.
I did not know that.
I definitely did not know that.
So. You mentioned it briefly. Where did you attend college again?
I went to Oxford, it was more
University.
Of a community college outside of Oxford.
It was
so
like
it
the junior college.
It was the junior college.
Like
East
Oxford.
East, right. My parents didn't have a lot of money.
Oxford State.
Oxford. it was a CC.
Shortly after receiving your first degree
Rockets, by the way.
Of course,
the
Oxford
Rockets.
Shortly after receiving your first degree, from Oxford State, the home of the Rockets, you had to leave the university due to a calamitous event. It was something that was traumatic for you to experience, and you had to leave school. Tell us what happened.
You know, that's a nice way to put it, a calamitous event. Well, what happened was is they caught me with the maids.
Oh,
I had a string of maids that I was working. I needed money, right?
Of course.
So I just started, I was like, I met a lot of sort of noblemen and upperclassmen, and I was like, you guys looking for some action? And I had met, because of the cobbling industry, my father, I don't know if you know this, but the cobbling industry, they have conventions every year. The cobblers know each other, right?
Sure.
And so a lot of cobblers, when they travel, they get they like to hit, you know, they're working it. They're working they work in local towns.
Yes.
So I knew a couple of ladies when I went to Oxford State.
Are you admitting to being a pimp right now?
What happened. That's what happened. I got kicked out of Oxford. I got sent down. That's what they call it. They call it sending them down. And they sent me down from Oxford State because I was running a string. You know, I was running a string. I was pimping out some ladies.
Got to make that money.
I had to make money. You know how expensive beakers are? They're very expensive.
I've never bought a beaker.
Never.
You bought
hand
a beaker
ever in my life.
Hand-blown glass.
I used to have a beaker
action
figure.
And by the way, hand-blown.
Hand-blown?
Right? That's what that's,
like the
that was the name of my, that was the name of my pimp string. The hand-blown.
That's a good name.
Pretty sweet.
As a scientist, are familiar with phrases that a lot of our listeners, probably all of our listeners, let's be honest, are not familiar with. I'd like for you to tell me what...
We have some smart listeners.
We do, but maybe they'll know what this is. I certainly don't. Can you tell me what the term Fluxians refers to?
Oh, you know, you never saw, you know, you were just talking about the Denver movie.
Oh, yeah. Things to do in Denver.
Sure.
You never saw Back to the Future, I take it, because Fluxians...
No. I abhor television and movies in all forms.
Okay.
I only listen to podcasts.
Well, the Fluxians, we were a speculative group, obviously, right? Because the thing is we wrote speculative fiction, which is what science was called at the time. It was called speculative fiction.
Speculative fiction?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, you know, because I was never, when I was acclaimed, when I did the thing, the big thing that I'm known for.
Sure.
Right?
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Is everyone was like, oh, that's that speculative fiction writer.
Right.
We don't believe him.
Sure.
Why
would you?
Yeah. So the Fluxians, we were a group of people that would talk about time travel.
Mm-hmm.
We would talk about the nature of energy,
how
energy could be transmuted from, you know, we didn't know about uranium at the time, but we had a lot of garbage.
Okay.
So
yeah.
We were trying to figure out how to turn garbage into energy.
Right.
Right.
And didn't even happen until the second movie. So
right.
It was the end of the first one. I heard about it on a podcast once.
Sure.
I get the reference. I don't know.
That's it.
At age 44, you published what is widely considered to be a revolutionary and important work in your field. It's been called the single most influential book in your field. And everybody knows about it. Please tell our listeners what it's called, what it's about.
It's called Redwall. It was a trilogy originally. I only got the first one done.
I see.
And it was about an apple.
An apple.
Right. And so what I did was I lived very close. You know, when I lived in my 40s. In my 40s, I traveled.
Sure.
Right? I did a lot of traveling. And so I was
in
Italy.
Where would you go?
I was in Italy. I was in Provence. And there was a
wall. That's in Italy.
That's I don't think it is, actually. But
I would have no idea.
It may be in France, actually.
It might be
in France.
Doesn't
matter.
But it was the French part of Italy.
Oh,
the
western part.
Right. I don't think you're... historically.
Right. Okay.
It was... talk to the Italians. Ask them.
Yeah.
Ask them if they think it's part of Italy. They do. Yeah. I talked to Napoleon.
We'll
he thinks
get
that
one
Italy
on
is part
and,
of. All right.
And we'll drill him on it.
So here's a scoop. There was a wall of red. I saw a wall of red, and there were apples.
Sure.
It was an apple orchard.
Sure.
And I don't know if you know this about apples, but they started in the Ukraine.
I did not.
Yes, and many
that's where
different.
They come from.
That's where they come from in the Ukraine, and there's a lot of they had brought them to Provence, Italy, and which is a small town.
Small town. Very
small town.
A hamlet, if you will.
It's a hamlet.
Sure.
It's outside of that other. You know, I think it's called Hamburg, which is also in Italy.
Hamburg.
Yeah. It's province. It's a suburb of Hamburg.
Of course.
And,
of course.
Yeah. And I was sitting there one day, and I was thinking about alchemy. And I was thinking about speculative fiction. I was
like
thinking about the novel that I want to write.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, an apple fell on my head. And I was like, thank God I'm hungry. So, because that's how you know how apples are ripe, you know.
Is when they fall on your head.
They fall right on your head.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so that was the first draft of the Redwall.
If you were really hungry, you had to just walk around the orchard until
you had to sit underneath the tree.
Yeah.
And then, because how could you know?
So the first
draft of that book was how to figure out how an apple is ripe.
How the apple became ripe, fell on your head.
It fell on my head.
Sure.
That's how I knew.
That's incredible.
That's why it changed the world, because people didn't know how ripe apples were until
people were going around
that
eating,
book.
So wait,
like,
it was a trilogy.
Apples.
Just briefly, what were the other two books about then?
He never got to it.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Pardon me.
Right. right. Well, the thing is the one a lot of people know about was published posthumously.
I see.
And it's where I speculate that the apple fell because of scientific reasons.
I see. So it's something that you got into.
Right. I didn't actually get to my whole book. The book that is critically acclaimed is all about how to discover how fruit is ripe.
Of course.
That was how I did it. The book that was published after I passed away, and by the way, they never kept the rights to that. My wife and kids, they lost the rights. They made movies about it.
We should scoop that up. We can make a movie about that.
Could be.
Well, I don't know movies, so it'll be your. You can write it, but.
Yeah, I'll make a podcast about the apple.
Yeah, about
that. And so, but the book that they published after I passed away was this whole thing about why the apple fell.
I see.
Not just because the first step is it fell because it was ripe.
Right.
And I knew
you were
that.
Hungry.
I was hungry. That's how I found it.
Did that sort of willpower, like, did you pull it down with like being so hungry? Just
why
sort
you gotta
of
talk about magic?
Alchemists take it very.
I'm a scientist.
I cannot believe I just did that. Yeah. I apologize.
Thank
please.
You. I'm a huge fan of magic.
He does love magic in the dark arts.
Actually, sure.
He's super into the dark arts.
Well, let's tap that mana.
Definitely.
That was the second name of my pimp run.
Sure.
Tap that mana.
Tap that mana.
Boom.
Channel that fireball. Another of your famous works was entitled Optics, and it was also an incredible...
It was a breakthrough.
A breakthrough,
that's
yes.
That's what you're looking for.
In science and in your selected field. Can you tell us about Optics, what that was?
Well, you know, because I come from shoe people, and that's what we call them. We call them shoe people.
Shoe people.
I knew how lenses worked.
Because
I don't know if you know this. Is when you make a pair of shoes, there's always a pair of glasses that are embedded deeply.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I need to buy new shoes.
Oh my God, look at your shoe right now.
Yes, I see it right now.
I
can't believe I missed
that. That's amazing.
It's a secret society. So Optics, it's another secret society.
Not a secret anymore.
Yep, because what do you got? Hundreds? Thousands? Tens
of shoes?
Of shoes.
Oh, there's, yeah, at least.
I've got like four or five pair.
Oh, okay. And then I've got probably three or four.
Just real quick, so we don't make a faux pas, is like you call them shoe people. Is it cool if we call them shoe people?
Right.
Or is it like,
we wouldn't want to.
Should we
just
say like shoe people?
What do you mean shoe people?
Shoe peeps.
Do you see what we're saying here?
Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's cool for
shoe peeps. That would not be cool. That is what shoe people call each other.
Okay, I just didn't know. I'm trying.
And
to.
When you say shoe people, you might want to make air quotes.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's like it's. I mean, they're shoe people could call other shoe people shoe peeps.
Right.
But the rest of us, if you say it, just to be some people do it just to be edgy. And you're just like, hey, poser. That's what you are. That's the real word you're looking for. So optics,
lenses.
Right. Lenses are what, in shoe culture, you were taught different ways to produce footwear.
Shoe culture. I'm sorry.
It's good,
that.
Right?
Yes,
yeah.
It's great.
And so what I learned was there were always scraps and extra things around, and that's how I got into science when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do is, you know, some of the stitches are very small on shoes.
Of course, yeah.
So my father, Larry, he was a good guy. I mean, there's no reason not to like Larry Newton. That's what everybody said, right? But he would make things. I think the reason my mom was mad was because he could have been anything, right? Like he made this thing so that he could see.
Could have done anything he wanted,
right? So he made this this sort of glass. I guess you'd call it like a magnifying glass.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
That's what
like
you'd
call it.
Like
a thick, large lens.
A large lens so that he could see tiny stitches. He could make the tiniest of stitches. That's what he was known for.
Sure.
And so when he made that, he would teach me how to make these lenses, right? And when I moved to Oxford, people were like, I can't see. And I was like,
okay.
Right?
You're going to need them. You need to be able to see.
Right, because that has killed more people. Not being able to see because a monster will come up to you. And
this is well known.
This is well known that monsters are out in the wild.
They are.
And you know, we can go to specifics of monsters. Owls, owl bears.
Owl bears are the worst.
They're nasty.
Do you know the
rust monsters? They're bad too.
You know how? Yes.
Yes.
You know how you could tell it's an owl bear because they say the words "gurhoo."
Really?
Yeah, as they come towards you, they're gurhoo.
Luckily,
and you got to run.
Never encountered an owlbear in the wild. Very happy about that.
You are very lucky. That's because you have glasses. And the reason you have glasses
is
because
you need to watch
out
for owlbears.
I might have even walked right past one and not even said
that. Oh, you know it.
You are lucky.
They smell just like a rancid mustard. And I don't think mustard can go bad, actually. But
is it like honey?
I think it used to be.
All right.
It used to be.
I'm really knowledgeable about mustard.
Excellent.
That's a lie.
Are you Colonel Mustard?
Yes.
Okay. You guys ever thought about having Colonel Mustard on?
Oh, we should. Awesome. We should. Mm. Well,
I've seen him in the afterlife.
You
know how he was killed.
He was in the conservatory, got strangled by the lead pipe. Yes, of course. You were not without your detractors in your career and critics in general.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
One of your biggest opponents was a man named Robert Hooke.
Why would you say that name to me?
We can't not bring it up. It's how we feel. We have to get the whole story.
Yes. Do you know why? Because Robert Hooke was fat.
Oh, man.
You know what that is? That's an Isaac Newton fat joke.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was. Known for putting the hammer down.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes, with your speculative...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. The comedy writing of... All right. Yeah, so Mr. Huck did not believe.
And
he had, well, the thing is he was one of these religious nuts, right?
Oh, okay.
So he wanted a finger in my pie.
Oh,
and
sure.
I said to him, I don't swing that way, brother.
No.
But I can hook you up with the mana tapping ladies and
yeah.
And then we'll hook you up. And then he didn't want that. Mm. He didn't want that.
Take it out of the Black Lotus. You can have a good time. Like,
exactly.
What a fool. He's completely missing out.
Yeah, he does not know. But I have to say that he challenged me. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that he was nitpicky. He's mm-hmm. a nitpicky guy. He's like, so apples fall from trees because of this.
Right.
Apples fall from trees when they're ripe,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you know that they're ripe. And that's how he talked. That's how he talked. He had a dumb voice.
Fat and had a dumb voice.
Exactly.
That's the double douche. Double whammy.
Double. And I was like, dude, you have got to back up. That's
sure.
what I said to him.
Sure.
I said, back up.
Would he get like in your face?
He was in my face.
Uh-huh.
You know what he'd have? He'd have a couple of pints of mead. We'd be down at the Bird and Baby, right? I don't know if you know the Bird and Baby in Oxford.
It's
sure.
It's a chain nowadays.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
across the South.
Sure. And and he would come up, and I'd be like, man, just step off, right?
Sure.
Yeah. It's like, I got shoe people that could take care of you.
Very much so.
Right. So, I mean, I get what he was saying. He was saying that the Lord will tell you when to eat an apple. Just pick them. Pick them anytime.
And
that's
then,
what it was.
And then
you store them in the dirt. That's what he did. He had like a root cellar.
That's not very
right. He's like, he would pick apples before they were ripe.
Uh-huh.
He would put them in baskets and put them in like, he called it a cellar. I called it the dirt. Right? He's like, you're storing that in the dirt until you think it'll, and then they would get mushy. And the
sure
thing is the way you want
no
to
one likes
eat an
a mushy apple,
apple, the way you want to eat an apple mm-hmm. is right after it's hit your head, and you go, oh my God, this feels good. And I used to hang out in Provence. I would mm-hmm. hang out under those trees. I did it for months. That's because the thing is when you are a scientist, you don't just make a decision because one apple falls off a tree.
Right. You have
right?
to keep
you
have to going
sit there
through
for
it,
days.
Right.
And I'll tell you something. The wife, not supportive. What are you going back to the apple orchard?
You were married?
Yep.
And what was your wife's name?
Louise.
Louise.
And Louise Newton.
Did you ever have any children with Louise?
We
experimented
with
children.
My mother was
unhappy.
She never met them.
What? How?
Because she didn't like children.
Oh,
that's right.
Right?
Remember?
Right. She didn't want us to have children.
That's
she was very, my mother, very proud of me being a scientist, not proud of the kid.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
You were married to your mother? Is that what I'm hearing?
No,
I
think
that.
You're getting mixed up.
Right. My mother's name was not Louise.
All of this information, it comes in my ear
Larry
holes and then
Ann
my
Newton.
Brain pulsates.
Larry and Ann Newton
yes.
were married the late 1500s.
Okay. And then Louise was your wife.
Louise was my wife.
I see.
Yes.
I see.
And my parents didn't even come to the wedding.
Why not?
Well, you know, they didn't approve. They didn't approve.
They didn't like apples?
No. There were no. This is pre-apple.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so
of course.
Louise, she came from merchants.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
How could you marry somebody like that?
My father was like, I'm an artist.
Insulting.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is...
You're going off.
Of the day, it was... You don't marry a merchant.
You don't marry a merchant.
Yeah.
And I know. And the thing is her family wasn't psyched about it either, because they were like, cobblers?
Yeah.
You're going to marry cobbler people? It was... So we lived a quiet life together.
Sure.
And then... But she had her own art, you know, Louise. She had her own job. I don't know if you... I met her at Oxford. I'm just
okay.
That's all
in
I'll
school.
Say.
In
you,
school.
You don't want to say what she did for
no. Well,
was she a quote unquote maid for you? Is
she
that?
Was. I met her in the maid industry.
Was she in the scullery a lot, perhaps?
She had, yeah. Well, and eventually she went into management, clearly.
Oh, okay.
Clearly.
Yeah.
You go into management once you get married.
But the family branched out.
Right. So she had a lot of paperwork to do a lot of times. But right. So I would spend, so here's the thing though. I go in Provence mm-hmm. to the Red Wall. I mm-hmm. go to the wall and I sit there day after day waiting for apples to fall to see if I'm right, right?
Yeah.
You know, uh-huh. That's the scientific method, mm-hmm. the Socratic method, mm-hmm. which I don't think is actually, I think it might be, it doesn't matter. I don't know
who Socratic is, but he sounds smart.
You don't know, okay.
That was the joke, Dave.
Oh, okay, sorry. I got it.
You got it.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry.
What else you got?
In April, at the age of 62, this is towards the end of your life.
I lived a long time.
You did.
You received 1600s.
An incredible award. You were honored, maybe the highest award you could ever receive.
Can you
tell us what that was?
It was the Hugo. I got the Hugo.
The Hugo?
Nice. Yeah, it was a nice one because I finally wrote my first novel.
Oh, I see.
And they were like, yes, this is great. And I don't know if you know this about... I know that they still have the Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people who get it, if they put sex in, that's what they like.
That's all
they
you
like,
really got
to
do.
All people want nowadays.
People want extraterrestrial sex, and then you win a Hugo. That's what
or
happens.
Or supernatural. Sorry to bring up magic again, but yes,
right.
Supernatural, werewolves, vampires.
Ghosts.
Ghost sex, yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. ghosts are real.
Are there tangible ghosts?
I wish.
Well, Isaac Newton is here.
Right. I am myself a tangible ghost.
So, a man, again, we're going to bring up...
Another
maybe,
enemy.
Maybe something that you're not... No, not an enemy.
Okay.
Absolutely not. There's a scientist in our age, a man named Simon Baron Cohen.
Okay.
Who recently concluded that...
Little Jewy.
A little bit. Okay. A little bit. He concluded throughout his study that you struggled with a certain developmental disability throughout your entire life that is just sort of... This is current news for us, and you must have known your whole life, of course.
Right.
Can you tell us what that was?
Well, obviously, dyslexia.
Oh, you were dyslexic.
Yeah. So I would get things backwards.
Right, like?
So you're familiar in your age, in the last 100 years,
mm-hmm.
Einstein.
I remember
it. Mr. Einstein.
Sure.
Okay, so he came up with MC squared, right?
Okay.
E equals MC squared,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I came
energy
up with that.
Energy equals
matter.
Mass. Is it matter?
I think it's mass.
Mass. Times the speed of light squared.
Right. Well,
MC squared.
Because I spent so much time outside, I started with the speed of light.
You started that way.
Started
right.
That.
I started with C squared.
Okay.
And I wanted it to equal the ripeness of an apple, the mass. Right?
Oh, sure. The mass and ripeness of an apple.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
I could have discovered that thing about energy. I could have discovered that. If I did not suffer from dyslexia.
So you kind of got it backwards.
I got it backwards. Einstein probably stumbled upon your notes and was just like, well, he was on Stumble Upon.
Exactly.
And then he saw, oh, look at this guy's notes, and I'll fix it for him.
You hold it up to a mirror, you get the formula.
We're coming to the end of your story, and unfortunately we have to talk about your untimely demise. Maybe it was timely.
Right.
It feels timely. When did you die? What was the date of your death?
My date of death.
Yes.
So,
the date you spent with death.
Right. Well, it was January 1st, 1700.
January 1st, 1700. And how did you die? What happened to
you? Well, I went out. I went out on a bang because it was New Year's Day, people.
Yeah.
New Year's Day. And I spent New Year's Eve, 1700, you know, worrying about... Of course, that was the year that everyone was afraid. Everyone had just brought abacuses back from China.
So
everyone thought that the abacuses would explode at the turning of the century.
Why?
Abacuses would all stop working.
Yes.
Right, that they would totally stop working.
I see.
January 1st. So we all spent the night and then we waited midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
January 1st, 1700, we all pull out our abacuses and stare at them, and that's then it got ugly because nothing happened, and we had two strong factions. There was a strong faction that was like, this is going to be the death of us all,
right?
And then I was on the side of right, as per usual,
of course,
and I was on the side of right. I knew what was happening,
mm-hmm.
and so I was like, see, it's fine. Watch me do some multiplication tables, and I did thwack 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 because I was good with an abacus, I'm telling you, late 70s, arthritis, no arthritis, and it never affected by my dyslexia.
Of course.
I could add, subtract, multiply, divide.
There's no reading and sliding the buttons.
Exactly.
Up and down.
Just nailed it, quite
sure.
honestly. And what happened then is one of the very, very vocal, this is going to be the end of us, a doomsayer.
Mm-hmm,
a doomsayer.
Sure.
Benjamin Ross.
Okay.
And he, weirdly enough, was a government official.
Oh,
at this time, I was living in Yorkshire.
I see.
And so he was
New Yorkshire. What,
famous for their puddings.
Famous for their puddings. Yes. They do good work with stacked foods.
And terriers.
And terriers. Yes. Yes. And so what he did was he beat me to death.
With his abacus.
He said, "Jeez. It will at least be the death of you." Those were his last words.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Although, I mean, that's horrible, but I got to say, that's kind of good.
It is kind of good.
He got to laugh. And then he beat me to death. And then it was less so because they.
Right. That probably walked the room. I mean, you don't want to. No one wants to stick through that.
Like, yeah, it's hard because they're like, who will be next?
At your funeral, which I'm sure you hung out at, everybody wants to see.
I want to see who shows.
Of course. Yeah. A certain person showed up to your funeral, a man named Francois Marie Arouette, very famous. And you were kind of friends. Can you tell us who he was?
I'm a little choked.
You look wistful.
I'm a little choked.
And
the fact that Francois, I forgot that Francois came.
Yes.
It was beautiful that he came.
Yes.
Because Francois and I, it was the summer of, I think it would have been 1677.
I see.
And.
The summer of love.
It was the summer right. of love. It was the summer of love. We met. He had read my apple treatise, uh-huh. right? He had read my treatise on uh-huh. apples and the nature of and the nature of ripeness. And he said that he thought that I was the best looking 63-year-old man he had ever seen in his life.
I have to agree.
We made love in a field.
Wow.
A beautiful poppy field. Yes, right. A field of poppies.
Right. And so this man was at your funeral as sort of a lover that didn't get to... Right. You know, it was very sad that you were
Should
gone.
Should I be very clear and say that he's a bottom?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
I mean,
well,
you don't need to be,
he was
okay.
French.
It's fine that you
so,
were.
You know, Francois, let's be honest.
Merchants, cobblers, and the French.
And the French. The last thing we'd like to speak of is where are your remains located? Where could our listeners go and visit your remains?
They were just dug up and replanted, actually. They're in the Forest Lawn Cemetery on mm-hmm. Forest Lawn Boulevard in mm-hmm. Toluca Lake, California.
Oh, well.
Yes.
That
beautiful.
Seems
yeah,
appropriate.
It's right next to Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, okay.
Because I loved her work. In the 50s, in the 1950s.
In the 1950s.
Right, and so I did a little haunting. I did some haunting.
Like you do.
Like you do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you know what? I want to be next to you.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know what she was? She was a sweet-looking maid.
She was. Well, Mr. Newton, thank you so much. Oh, please, Dave. Dave.
How do you get the pretzels so darn salty?
David! Damn it. Time. Mr. Newton, thank you so much for joining us.
You're
We've
welcome.
Learned
yes,
so,
so
much
thank
here
you.
Today.
Thanks for
and, of course, enjoy eternity.
Sir Isaac Newton came around to my house one day. His face was all sunburned and red. He said he didn't want to sleep in the shade of a tree because an apple might fall on his head. I said, Sir Isaac, you dumbbell, take my advice. Go right back there and sleep beneath that tree. And if you let that rotten apple fall down on your head, why, you'll discover gravity.
If you're just joining us, you're a fool because you just missed a great segment that we did with the hilarious Jackie Cation. Thank you so much for taking time to be here with us.
Oh yeah, Limestone
we were very
Fest.
Excited.
Let's do it.
It's really great. Jackie is a powerhouse comedian and
sure.
just
sure.
In the nerd world, in the geek world, in the chic world.
Right.
I'm just
right.
trying to rhyme right now.
You got you doing a little hip hop.
A little bit. A little bit. You have the Dork Forest podcast. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Dork Forest podcast. Dork on Dork Dialogue. Mm-hmm. One of the safest spaces in Podcastville, though I have
sure.
to say this was very much a safe space.
Well, we try and keep it comfortable.
We try to be nourishing.
This is the sex dungeon. That's what we call this room.
This room must have amazing acoustics.
It's okay.
It's pretty sweet.
It's okay.
Okay. And so, yeah, the Dork Forest, you can go to dorkforest.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a search button, and you could search for your dorkdom.
Sure.
Or you can search, you could probably just do it on Google, too.
You
could write Dork Forest and bananas, and if I ever discuss bananas.
Dork Forest bananas.
Who
so
loves bananas?
You can search it by topic, like
yeah.
on there? Oh, that's
You can
nice.
Search by topic, and you can search by dork. Like if
oh,
you,
so if you
like,
wanted to hear an episode with say,
Diva Zappa or
right, right.
Greg Proops
or
Camille. Mark Maron.
Yeah, you've had Camille on the show, right?
Camille Nanjiani?
Yes, of course.
He was on
Do you
once.
Know another Camille? That
I do not.
Okay. Well,
I do not
go.
Know another Camille Nanjiani.
Right.
Has Camille done your show?
No, of course not. Well,
oh,
we would love
best.
To have him.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
yeah. We'll if he comes back into town. He was here, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 months ago, but yeah,
cool.
he's hilarious. You have a couple of CDs out. You want to talk about those?
Sure. I have the early CD that I did myself on Shareware
mm-hmm.
That is no longer available.
Ah.
And if you have that, rip it quick before it disintegrates. Because it was, I edited edited it and did the audio myself.
I see.
On Goldwave.
Oh,
free,
yeah.
Free audio. And I didn't even, there was no levelator at the time.
Oh, that's...
So it sounds like a Red Fox album from 1969.
Which
you can
is pretty
hear the
cool.
Jokes.
Which, yeah, yeah.
Sure. And so that was Cake Is Not My Downfall.
Mm-hmm.
So then I did Circus People in, mm-hmm. I think, 2005 or 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And then... 2011, I did my current album, which was Top 10 Comedy Albums of
yes.
the Year on Amazon, and it's called It Is Never Gonna Be Bread.
Never Gonna Be Bread.
And that has a lot of stuff from the Cake album.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bread album has Cake tracks.
It's evolved into a...
Right, I just recorded it.
It's
I was like,
de-evolved.
I'm gonna be,
yeah, I think Cake goes backwards to become Bread, not the other way around.
Right, and so those are my two albums, and I'm doing a new album and DVD at the end of the year.
Awesome. Do you know where you're recording that?
At Acme Comedy
Company, really?
Which is
Great.
Where I always record everything in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's
awesome.
My home club. It's the best.
It's your home. And you're a Midwest
yeah.
lady. You're
I'm from
Wisconsin.
I'm from Wisconsin originally and a Minneapolis comic, and
sure.
I live in Los Angeles.
That's great. That's
yeah.
great. Well, let's get into it here. I know you're really busy, and we don't want to keep you around too much. Isaac Newton, of course, he's an English physicist and mathematician. He's famous for the law of gravity. That's his
right,
that's his
go-to.
Bread and butter. He was instrumental.
And that's almost all I know about him, quite
yeah.
honestly.
You got England. You got England.
You got England.
I almost went Germany.
Yeah, well, he was incredibly instrumental in the scientific revolution of the 17th century. He was born...
17th century?
I was going to say.
He was born January 4th, 1643.
Oh.
Very, very close.
That's really
right.
close.
13 years off. He was born in Woolsthorpe, Lincolnshire, England. To
she got Shire?
To,
Shire?
There's a Shire in there. Maybe that'll be a point. Isaac Newton was also the name of his father. His
okay.
father's name was Isaac Newton.
Were they Jews?
They were not Jews.
Ah, oh, damn!
He was a far- his father was a farmer.
Okay.
And a pretty good one, I guess. Yeah. Newton never knew.
Grew.
Newton never knew his father. His father died 3 months before he was born, so he never got
oh.
to know the guy. His mother remarried soon thereafter, and Newton was raised by his grandparents on their farm, I assume.
Oh, they sent him off? The new dad was like...
The new dad was not having it.
I will not be raising somebody else's child.
Well, it's interesting because his mother also wanted a very specific lifestyle for him. Newton attended a secondary school, and he was removed from it by his mother. His mother wanted him to be a farmer. That's what she wanted from him. She did not want him educated. She was like,
oh.
get out of school. You're going to focus on farming. And he hated it. He hated farming. He hated anything to do with
yeah, the land.
Other than apples, I would say,
right.
probably.
Yeah.
He met a man in the school named Henry Stokes, who was the headmaster of the school. He persuaded Newton's mother to send him back to school so that he can complete his education. And
where did he go?
The King's School.
Oh,
the King's School.
I've heard of that.
And that was the high school, I guess, the secondary school. He decided to go back mostly because he had a desire for revenge against a schoolyard bully. And
he went to school for revenge.
He wanted to be the cock of the walk, the big man on campus. So he went back for it. At 19, he composed a list. He started carrying this notebook in 1662 that he used to track finances, to work out math problems, but he also used it to track every sin he had committed up to that point.
So kind of the opposite of dreams.
Right, pretty much. Many
wow.
of them many of them related to working on Sunday.
He might have had some guilt issues.
A little bit, probably. Some were really outlandish, like, quote, robbing my mother's box of plums and sugar. Rubbing would make that
yeah,
very
rubbing
different.
My mother's box would be more of a sin, I think.
Yikes.
Beating Arthur Storer, punching my sister, falling out with the servants. These are sins for this man. And my personal favorite, threatening my father and mother Smith, which was his stepfather's name, to burn them and their house over them.
Oh, wow.
Threatened to burn their house down.
Oh, yeah. We've all done that as a kid.
Just, yeah, I think that's just teenager angst.
Sure, sure. In the fall of 1661, Newton studied at Cambridge University, not Oxford.
Ah, there we go.
Very close. It's located in Cambridge, England, of course. It's the second oldest university in the English-speaking world after Oxford University,
right.
which is
sure.
the oldest.
So you're close.
Yeah, yeah. It grew out of an association
I'll
of scholars.
Tell you something.
Yes?
The Oxford has a pub in it called the Bird and Baby.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that really is a pub.
Yeah,
I
it's
didn't
a real
catch
pub.
That.
It's the Eagle and Child. And they call it the Bird and Baby, and it's where Tolkien hung out with the Inklings.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
I went there once and had a relish sandwich. I was like, that can't possibly be what that sounds like. It is exactly. It is
relish
on two
bread.
Pieces of bread. I was like, this is the worst spending of £2.40 that I've ever done in my life.
I don't know how much money that translates to, but I'm going to say you're right.
No, that's a $5 sandwich. it.
$5 for relish on was it at least good relish?
No. Well, I don't care. Man. I don't like relish.
Really?
Yeah, and it was funny because I was overhearing on the next table, they were talking about they were Oxford kids, right? Mm-hmm. Oxford College guys, mm-hmm. talking about how they had been to the United States, and they said, one of the things I like about the United States is that they're willing to try anything. And I held up my sandwich, and I was like, yeah, I just bought this item.
Yeah.
And I don't approve.
Thank you so much.
I was going to say, I applaud your adventurous spirit.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd try.
It's like, this is your fault, and right. I'm never coming back
but
here.
I see your point. You're like, oh, it couldn't be just that.
Right, it's got to be something else. Am I going to relish this?
Well, no. Like, if you get potato soup, it's not going to be just potatoes and water. Like, there's going to be a little more in it.
There should be something else going on.
Of course, of course. Shortly after receiving his first degree, he left university due to a calamitous event in the world, not even just in his life. And that was the Great Plague, which was the last epidemic of the bubonic plague to occur in England. It killed an estimated 100,000 people, which is about 15% of London's population. Due to this, he got to go home and study. Like, he got to do more science, and he was happy to do that. He returned home to consider...
Nice that the plague worked out so well for him.
Of course, yeah.
Right, the plague was good for some people.
He's sitting in his backyard in his garden where an apple fell. And it didn't hit him in the head, unfortunately.
That is a myth.
That is the myth. That's the apocryphal part, but the rest of it is true.
But still, the apple falling.
The apple
that's
fell
the point.
From the tree. He realized it. The direction the apple fell, along with every other object on the ground, I'm sorry, on this round earth, always fall towards the earth's center. It wasn't just that the apple fell, but that it tried to go to the earth's center, which is,
C.S. Lewis.
That was his eureka moment, but
yep.
he didn't say eureka. That didn't happen either. Okay. That's another part of the eureka after the apple hit his head.
Well, wait, C.S. Lewis, you were going to say.
Right, C.S. Lewis wrote a space trilogy,
uh-huh.
and the first book is called Out of the Silent Planet, and his spaceship had gravity, and it was based on Isaac Newton's gravity. Because,
sure.
It was a for some, in C.S. Lewis's world, we have conquered gravity, and it only works in the center of a ship, so everybody walked around the edges of the ship. So, but that was the only way we could create gravity was to put it at the center, like the Earth.
He realized that
like that, I think
that the Earth had drawn the apple to it. He realized that every object in the universe draws every other object, probably in proportion to its mass. You know, so Newton didn't publish his big findings until about 20 years later. So this was something that he saw and was just like, oh, I'll work on this for 20 years, and then you know,
well, it's kind of a big thing.
Fluxions is Newton's term for differential calculus. That's what he talked about specifically.
As I failed algebra in college.
There you go.
I might not have been your go-to.
Differential calculus is a subfield of calculus concerned with the study of the rates at which quantities change. It's one of the two traditional divisions of calculus, the other being integral calculus, which you know all about.
Oh, I'm super
I don't
into
know math
calculus.
At all. At no. age 44, Newton published what is considered to be the shit of his field of physics. It's called Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica, and it's Latin for Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, often referred to just as the Principia. It's a work in three books. First published in
a trilogy.
First published in the 5th in July 1687. It states that Newton's laws of motion forming the foundation of classical mechanics, also Newton's law of universal gravitation, and
Redwall is actually about mice with swords.
Mice with swords.
Yeah.
That gladiator.
Oh, no, that's
mice.
A real book.
That's a real book.
Is it?
Yeah.
Check it out.
Okay, Mice with Swords. Gonna check it out. Oh wait, no. The Redwall is an actual book about mice with swords.
About mice with swords.
Now I have to read that. Another of his famous works was entitled Optics, and this you pretty much hit the nail on the head here. The book analyzes the fundamental nature of light by means of refraction of the light with prisms and lenses, and the diffraction of light by closely spaced sheets of glass. Basically, how white light turns to color, or colored light turns to white, and not the other way around.
Wow,
so,
I want no points for that, because
I was
going to
say, that's almost word for word what you said, I believe.
I mean, you were talking about lenses. You were right there hovering around
it. I know what the word optics means.
Sure, yeah, of
so
course.
So point for not being an idiot. We'll give you that.
We'll give you that. He was not without his retractors. Robert Hooke was an English physicist who discovered the law of elasticity. That's a big deal, right?
Oh, yeah. Boing.
Known as Hooke's law, and who did research in a remarkable, just a large variety of fields, like you would during the Scientific Revolution. He's well known for his constant disputes with Isaac Newton over credit for Newton's work on gravitation and the planets and light. So he basically was like, I came up with all this before you did. And Newton's like, nuh-uh. And then abacus fight.
And then they met after school right by the swing set and they had a fight.
Abacus fight. He was never married. He reportedly was engaged at one point, but there's no historical evidence to back that up. But never married, had no children. Mm-hmm. Science was his wife.
He was a recluse, is what I heard.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He
was a hermit crab.
He worked.
He grew to the size of whatever building he lived in.
So you put him in a cathedral, he's huge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just his ego.
Cambridge, you know, he pretty much carried the university around. In April, at the age of 62, he was honored with an incredible award. In 1705, Queen Anne knighted Newton during a royal
visit.
That's
not an award. That's a check every year.
That's an award.
That's what that is. That's a job.
He was only the second scientist to ever be awarded after Sir Francis Bacon, very famous man as well.
You know, that's a good point. Like, what point did being knighted stop meaning you have to go fight things? Like, oh, it's just an honor.
Probably after the Crusades, just people didn't have to go fight.
Yeah. By then, it wasn't a fighting gig. It was a social gig and a taxation gig. They were like, well, the crown's going to give you £1,000 a year because we appreciate your genius.
Just you being here.
Yeah, just you being here. And then what you do for that is you have to show up at Queen Anne's birthday party and fucking
entertain her children.
Ass.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, Elton John is knighted, so I mean, now I'm not that Elton John is a brilliant. Don't get me wrong.
I'd like to see the Queen just call all the knights in to fight. Okay, guys, shit's serious.
Right.
Simon Baron Cohen, very Jewy.
Right.
He's a professor of developmental psychopathology at the University of Cambridge, and he's also the director of the university's Autism Research Center, and he's almost positive that Newton had Asperger's syndrome.
Oh,
positive.
Okay, can I? I'm doing a new joke about Asperger's syndrome.
Oh, please.
And, I'm not going to do that joke. I'm going to do my rant instead about Asperger's syndrome. Because you used to, when I was a child, and granted, if I had been a child today, I would be medicated within an inch of my very life.
Me too.
Right.
Absolutely.
Children are not allowed to be children. And, and they call it boy energy, and they say, you're acting up, and you're like, yeah. Shit happens.
Sure,
You're in the cat wrangling business. I'm sorry. I'm sorry
you
that you
chose
are better,
this profession.
Right. I'm sorry that you are not better paid for it.
Right.
But the thing is like busy parents are like, what is wrong with this kid? And you're like, it is a child.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, you were also allowed to be shy. You could be shy.
Okay.
You could be shy. You could be reclusive. You could be a shy kid. You were no longer allowed to be shy.
Yeah,
you
now
gotta
everybody's got to be
the goddamn party.
You know, you got to.
But you can't go too far either.
If you're too animated, they're like, no. This isn't going to work. So it's a bit of a brush. I'm not saying that Asperger's doesn't exist.
Sure.
Except for that the word didn't exist until several years ago.
Sure.
And, but we're creating a generation of reavers, you guys.
The
is
mutants?
A Firefly.
Sorry. Firefly, not X-Men. Okay, well, it's okay. Yeah. Newton, unfortunately, died March 31st, 1727. Also pretty
almost
close.
100.
He was 84 years old.
Is not a career cut tragically short, my friends.
Not really at all. He died of natural causes in his sleep, so he didn't have, like, tumors in his face or something.
On his head.
He didn't get beaten to death with an abacus, which may be my favorite way to die now. At his funeral...
I'll remember that.
Please beat me to death before I die. At his funeral, a man named François-Marie Arouet was present. And Jean de Arouet, yes.
Francis Arouet.
Also known by his nom de plume, Voltaire.
Oh.
He was a French Enlightenment
writer. So they could
have
been lovers.
They were buddies. They were definitely buddies. He was an Enlightenment writer in France. He was a historian, a philosopher. He's famous for his wit. He could do a tight 20 like nobody's business.
Yeah. Who wants to follow Voltaire?
Nobody.
That's what they used to say.
He's well known for his attacks on the Catholic Church and the advocacy of freedom in religion, freedom of expression, et cetera, et cetera.
Free love.
At Newton's funeral, he praised the British for honoring a scientist like Newton who had... You know, he was a heretic.
Yeah, they called him a heretic.
So that was a big deal. He's buried in the famous Westminster Abbey in England, which is a huge deal.
Right. In London. Is that in London?
Westminster, I think
Abbey?
So.
I feel like it
maybe.
Is.
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds right.
I'm going to say yes.
I like it.
Other famous dead people buried in Westminster Abbey, Charles Dickens, Geoffrey Chaucer, the famous poet, and Charles Darwin, the dinosaur.
Chaucer worked a little blue for me.
Oh, was he? Yeah, you can't trust anything that guy says.
Did you just say Charles Darwin was a dinosaur?
Yeah, you know
the
what
famous
I'm saying.
Dinosaur.
He's a dinosaur guy.
You're thinking of Barney.
Okay, we're going to tabulate the score now.
Excellent. Four points. Right. Four points is actually pretty
20%? That's pretty good.
That's not bad. Well, here's the crazy thing is that I was on a show many years ago. It was a game show much like this. It was called it wasn't like this at all. Anyway,
sure.
It was called The List and it was on VH1.
Okay.
And Henry Rollins hosted this thing and you were given a topic and you picked three songs.
Okay.
And the topic was, in my case, freedom or justice. It was some sort of social awareness kind of. That was the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, Steven Seagal.
Oh, man.
Ray Manzarek from The Doors, who just passed away.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And the guy who played Chandler's friend on Friends. Chandler's roommate, short-lived roommate on Friends. That
Joey?
Wasn't Joey. No, the short-lived, the guy who had the goldfish, the...
He wasn't on very long.
He was on Saving Private Ryan as well. He played the Jewish...
David Schwimmer?
No, he played the Jewish...
I don't know much about Friends, so...
Right. Oh, and you're not... It was the movie Saving Private Ryan, but you don't know anything about movies.
Yeah, I never watch them.
So, but the thing is... It was a motley crew of people, and I picked... I picked Do They Know It's Christmas as one of the songs because it was funny.
Right.
And Rollins busted me because I didn't pick any women. He was like, I have to pick Aretha Franklin's Respect. And I said, I'm a comic.
Right.
I picked the thing that might get a laugh. And Ray Manzarek said to me about Do They Know It's Christmas? He said, you know, those people never got that money in Africa from Do They Know It's Christmas.
They never got Christmas.
And I said, they're also Muslims. They didn't know it was Christmas.
Right.
So whatever.
I wonder, there were a lot of those in the 80s. There was Ronnie James Dio put one together. If you're familiar with Dio, there was like a hair metal one that they did.
I can't do music.
There was We Are the World. That's my dork thing is like music. And it's been so awesome to have you here. Thank you so much for taking time.
Yeah, we are very...
It's been a pleasure.
Excited all week about this. So yeah.
And,
this was super fun, so
good,
I appreciate
good.
It.
Do you want one more time, you want to plug Dork Forest?
Yeah, if you go to dorkforest.com, you can go to jackiecation.com and see where I'm doing stand-up, and there's Dork Forest links. You can watch me tell a joke, see if you think it's funny.
It's very funny.
And there's merch and whatnot.
Last night.
Oh, thanks.
I didn't get to see it, unfortunately, because I
heard?
Was running all over the place. Well, I was there at the beginning of the show, but I had to go all over. But, man, two more shows still?
I think four.
That was great. That's great. So this episode will be out when that's over. But still, go see Jackie when she's in your town. If she's... anywhere near you, go see her, say hello. Very nice person.
On Twitter, @JackieCation, if you want to...
@JackieCation?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Tweet it up. And you're a huge, huge person on Twitter. Like, you tweet all the time, so...
I really do.
Yeah.
And so some people said, you have too many tweets. And I was like, is there a way that I can get rid of all my tweets and start over so you don't know how many times I've tweeted?
I don't want to have all these tweets.
And then someone said, people hire people to clean up their Twitter feeds. And I said... oh, that sounds expensive and ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds...
I don't care enough about that.
You can find out more about History Bluffs by going to historybluffs.podomatic.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/historybluffs. David Britton has a website. It's davidbrittoncomedy.com. And his Twitter handle is @lasersaurus.
That's the show I do.
My Twitter handle is @saltgravy. Please drop us a line. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you like Jackie on the show. How could you not?
If you want more information about Isaac Newton, go to your public library.
History Bluffs.